Wow, you sat down.
Yeah, I had to sit down and I'm standing too much today, and the last interview just exhausted me, so. So
all right.
You're doing it wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And I told them, guys, no. When you get the salary, then you save. And then the rest of the money goes into spending on whatever. You save first, and then you spend the money. And they were like, wow, that's brilliant. Really, they never thought about it this way, you know? Hello, I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is the podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books to read and want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day, working on our app, Nosby.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
And today we are discussing a book. Another financial book.
Yes. We mentioned it last week and a couple of weeks ago. So if you're not prepared, then you're in for a ride or not. The book is called Profit First by Mike Michalowicz, or Mike Michałowicz, as we would say in Polish. So the book is about finance, but something different. It's a book written for entrepreneurs, for company owners. But that's not the reason why we're discussing this. Like, between the two of us, you're the company owner, I'm not. But the core idea is interesting. It's something super simple, but yet I found it very insightful and inspiring. And it inspired just a system for managing personal finances. So I adapted it to my own needs. But let's start with explaining what the idea is.
All right. So the idea is this, profit first, is that the normal formula that, you know, you have income, you have expenses, and then you profit, is good for accounting. But it doesn't apply to real life, actually. Because very often what happens is that after expenses and after the income, there's no profit. So you have no money to invest in your company, you have no money to put aside, you are just you don't have control of money. And in this book, the author is trying to convince us and to set up a system, like a system for managing money, so that you account for things before they happen and not after they happen. Because the main problem with this kind of accounting, with this traditional kind of accounting, is that you react to what happened instead of you plan and prepare for what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the big idea, like, it very much fits in the podcast theme, because it's a system optimized for, like, managing stuff around human flaws, like not like pure theory, but how humans are flawed and make stupid decisions. And instead of trying to change the human, let's change the system and organize things in such a way that staying within the right habits and doing the right thing is the easiest thing to do. Right, yeah. Because the normal tendency is for you to just spend all the money.
Exactly. I mean, it fits so much in the theme of this podcast and of productivity in general. Like the fact that you pre-decide on things, this way your monkey brain will not freak out later. You know, you pre-decide before so that you know what to do later. The fact that we pre-decide on our most important tasks in the evening, so that in the morning we don't go to Twitter, but we just go to our first task, because it's already been decided for. And this is the kind of similar situation. You know, you, as you said, you know, you optimize to trick your monkey brain.
Right. So we'll explain the system in a second. But what it counteracts is this natural tendency that you do what the author calls balance-based accounting. So you look at the bank balance, you see there's money, and you're like, oh, there's money. We can grow the company and buy this new thing or whatever, and you spend it all. And then you realize, there's no profit left for me to take as the company owner, or there's no stuff to invest in, like to save up for the longer-term investment, or to save up for when something bad happens and you need lots of money. You just sort of live paycheck to paycheck, even though you started a company for a reason, right? To be independent and whatnot. But then your natural tendencies get in the way, and you spend all of the money. And I guess the book is written very much from the American perspective, which I think makes the problem even worse, because in the US, even more so than in other countries, like everything is on credit. So yes. There's a delay between when you decided that you owe some money to someone and when you see the change in your balance. So you might see a positive, like a nice balance, and that there's money to spend on all sorts of different things. But then, you know, it turns out that there's still money you have to like take out of your balance, because you've already said you like it's already decided. You just haven't like actually made the payment, right? And then profit never comes.
Yeah, for example, in our industry, in our company, on one hand, we are lucky because people are paying for Nozbe before they use the service. So like, you know, when you start your subscription, you pay for the first month or you pay for the first year, and then, you know, you use it. So we are lucky in this sense, because very often, like usually what happens is that you first deliver the service and then somebody pays you if they actually pay you. In our case, they pay us before, which is good. But because they pay us through credit cards and with, you know, other forms of payment, PayPal and other things, this money goes through the, you know, through these services, and then it ends up in our bank account. But it always does end up like with a 1 week or 2 week delay. So in this sense, we also have to plan that, you know, if we earn $10,000 today, and it was like, yeah, we have $10,000, it's gonna end up in our bank account only in the next 2 weeks, not yet. So we don't have, like, we see it and we see a nice spike of sales or whatever, but we don't see the money yet. So this is like a similar situation in this sense, that, you know, it's a delayed thing. So you shouldn't be feeling today like you have $10,000, because you don't have it yet. It's gonna come in 2 weeks.
So how do we counteract these human tendencies to spend it all?
We create a system, like we always do. We create a system where we put money aside first, and then we spend only the money that's left, and not the other way around. We don't spend money, and then, oh my gosh, there's nothing left. So this is the thing. You put money aside first.
Right. So the idea is that you have, like, you just make more buckets. Right?
Yes.
So you have the, like, just create sub accounts in your bank account, and you have the income bucket, and all of the income comes here, but you don't spend anything from there directly, right? And then you have additional buckets, like you have reserves for tax. Again, that depends on the country. Like, generally, like in your case, like everything is month to month, but in some cases, I think in the US, like some stuff you pay, I don't know, once a year or something. Like that's what I understood from the contest from the book. So you have to plan more in advance. But even if it's month to month, you have to set aside. Then there's a profit bucket, so you set aside money for profit. And there's the operating expenses bucket, so for operating expenses, for everything else, and for compensation. For you, not profit, but just like your salary as if you're an employee, and for all the other employees. And you do it like once. You decide on the percentages for each bucket based on past numbers, past experiences. You figure out what the good numbers are, and then each month or twice a month or whatever suits you, you spread money from the income bucket to those other buckets. And you can only spend money from a bucket within the category. So tax reserves are only for tax, and operating expenses are only for operating expenses, and profit is only for profit. Once you've decided that you set aside, you know, 5% or 15% or whatever it is for profit, it doesn't come from that account for anything else. You see some shiny new thing that you could buy for the company that would improve the operations, and you see, oh, I have the money, right? But it's in the profit bucket. It's already pre-decided, because the profit is important. And if there's not enough money in the operating expenses bucket, then it doesn't mean that you spend money from the profit bucket. It means that you can't afford it.
Exactly. So in my case, for example, I do it on the 20th of every month. On 25 every month, I get to pay income tax, and then when I do that, based on the income tax that I paid for the last month and history, first of all, based on this income tax, particularly from this month, I get things calculated automatically, and then based on the history, I have additional things calculated automatically. So, for example, we have we buy lots of services from the US, so we have a separate US dollar account where we have a credit card, and we use this credit card for the services, Amazon services, you know, like many services that we use to run our company. So on the 20th, I already put the money there for these services. You know, I know how much more or less I'm going to spend there for next month. So I put money aside. It's done. Go. And in this sense, on the 20th, I really have the spreadsheet. I'm calculating the spreadsheet. I'm putting money in all these sub accounts. And only then, and then I'm taking the profit as well. So the you know, the what's left, and then from there, I have the expense account. So this way, again, it's pre-decided. I based on what happened, plus based on the history, I do the calculations. I spread the money in the buckets, and then I can go on.
Yeah. And we could end the episode there. Like
exactly.
The audiobook was like 6 hours long, and there was a lot of like technical details and stories and whatnot, which is useful. It's context. And again, we talked about it a long time ago. Books are vehicles for ideas, and you need ideas drilling into you for more than 20 minutes for you to not just get it in theory, but like internalize it. But that's the basic idea. It's as simple as that. And people don't do it. Like a lot of company owners apparently don't do it. Like it's a ridiculously simple idea. Like it shouldn't need to be a book, but like I never thought about it like this, to like pre-decide on categories of like spending like beforehand, and then like only be able to spend from those buckets.
I'm telling you, I mean, this is really a true story. Just 1 week ago, we had a meeting with a friends, and they are both successful. They have good jobs. They have a daughter. They are pretty well off. Middle class, just like myself. So like very, very like, smart people, good people. And we started talking for some reason about savings. Because they were thinking about getting a house, and they said that, you know, with the size of savings that they have now, it will be hard for them to have the down payment, you know, right now at this moment. And I asked them why. Like, why wouldn't you have for down payment? You know, and it wasn't like a question, like, you know, ridiculous question. I was just curious. I mean, with the amount of money that they're earning, I mean, they should, you know, be able to accumulate down payment, you know, pretty, you know, quickly. With proper savings. Like, yeah, because we haven't saved that much, you know, this year or whatever. And I'm like, how are you saving? And they said, well, so, you know, we spend money, you know, during the month. And then we say at the end of the month, we see that something's left and we put it on the savings. And then I was like, well, even you guys don't get it. You're doing it wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And I told them, guys, no. When you get the salary, then you save. And then the rest of the money goes into spending on whatever. You save first, and then you spend the money. And they were like, wow, that's brilliant. Like, really, really, they never thought about it this way, you know? And really intelligent people, really nice people, very, very good friends of ours. Like, when I told them this brilliant idea of putting money aside in the very beginning when they get the salary, they were just astonished. Like, their eyes opened.
I love when the simplest ideas turn out to be most powerful, because we're not just talking about some esoteric thing like we often do and enjoy. Like, we're talking about like serious stuff, like being able to afford a house.
Exactly.
Right? This is important. This is like one of the biggest life decisions and purchases, right?
Exactly.
And took so little to possibly change your friend's life going forward.
Exactly. So because then they realized that they were just, you know, the month would go, they would go out, the money would be gone, they would save nothing or save just a little bit. And this is the problem, and this is the Parkinson's law.
Yes, just their resources used tend to expand until they consume all resources available, and it's just human nature, right?
Exactly.
It's like it's interesting when talking about like transportation. Like I'm into transportation because my brother is into it, and mostly my brother did a lot of work in my city to improve cycling infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Like a really interesting, like fascinating thing in cities is that you have traffic jams, right?
Yeah.
And what do you think? There's not enough lanes. There's not enough space for the cars. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
And like this is obvious that the only logical, completely logical when you think about it, solution is to expand the road so that it has more lanes. But it almost never works. Like it's ridiculous. Like logically, it shouldn't make sense. But that's almost always how expanding roads end up. It's not enough because it will help a little bit for a time, and then people will be like, you know what, I'll take a car for this route this time. You know, I hated the traffic jam that was before, and so I decided to take a bus to work. But now, you know what, I think I'll get back to going using my car. It helps for a while, and then magically people find a way to fill in the damn lanes again. Exactly. So sometimes it's the solution, but only like extreme circumstances where you really don't have enough throughput. But most of the time, it's not the solution, and something else is the solution, changing the system completely and not just adding to it, right?
Exactly. So that's why when you put a limit on yourself, when you know, when you save first and you have the, then you will spend the money that you have and you'll still be happy. It will not be a problem. And it's very often it's a whole thing of people when people are trying to help other people get from debt, is that, you know, this month save $1, that's it, $1.
Mm-hmm.
Next month save $2, you know, and in this way people just learn that, you know, it's okay, it's fine if I don't have $5, $10, $20, $50, $100. Like, you know, suddenly people realize that they can still, I mean, it's not like they're suffering now that they don't have this money. You know, that they can still adjust their life to the money that they have. And if they don't save it, well, they do it anyway. So
that's actually what the author of the book recommended, to make estimations of the percentages you need for each bucket and then make them smaller. And like with the profit bucket, like if you're not already in the habit as a business owner to set aside profit, then start with 1%. Like just 1% of the income goes to profit. So like because the what you don't want to do is to be like forced to cut back, to like put the to go from like 10% profit to 5% profit, because like you already have commitments and you have to uphold them. Like you want to start small, but then like expand the right percentages until you have more and more savings.
So tell me how you applied the knowledge from the book in your case.
All right. So I wanted to first give you my my objectives, like why this seemed relevant to me.
Okay.
Because again, like many people have a stronger motivation with this because they have a pressing need, like they can't make ends meet, right?
Yes.
I don't have a problem. I'm fortunate enough to have a well-paying job, and I'm young. I live cheaply. I always, ever since I started making money, I would be able to set aside a good chunk of my income as savings, and not savings as in spend this year, but like long-term savings. But even then, I see this nasty phenomenon, which is called the lifestyle inflation.
Oh yes,
right. So the idea is inflation, like same things cost more over time, and lifestyle inflation is same things cost more over time, but not because of the economy, but because of you. Like you feel like you're living the same way. You're not any happier. Like you didn't like you're not going from being poor to being not poor, you still feel okay, right? You feel the same. And yet, the same things, the same like life basics, necessities, cost you more and more just because you have the money. And so you somehow manage to spend it.
Oh, yes.
Right? So I want to cut that down, not because I have to now, but because I don't like the trajectory, right? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about stuff I don't care about, things that doesn't make my life considerably better, right? Like I don't care if I with basic life stuff like food and clothes, like I don't want to spend a lot of money on that because this is just basics. It doesn't make me feel great. It doesn't make me feel like I'm growing, like I'm learning something. It's just stuff, you know? So I don't want to go on the trajectory of lifestyle inflation. I want to put a cap on myself and hone good habits in terms of personal finance with the everyday spending, and also in terms of savings, and also with intentionality with larger purchases. So like I said last week, I don't want to, I want to spend money on stuff where I feel like I'm learning, like on travel and stuff like that. But with other things, like if I'm buying something expensive, like I want to just do it because the balance on the bank account says I can, so why not? But make it intentional, like, is this really what I want? Like, make it a real decision and not a snap decision, right? So I want to constrain myself in some way, but at the same time, and this is what we talked about, this is why we talked about it last week in terms of like what young people should, how they should approach savings and money. I don't want to constrain myself in pursuits that demand money, but I consider them important and worth it. Like anything that involves learning and just new experiences and exploring and growing. Like for me, that's primarily travel, right? Travel can be expensive. It doesn't have to be expensive, but it's generally quite expensive. I also, like, I'm fortunate enough that since I work in technology, I want to buy new cool things, but again, with intentionality, not every year just because it's available, but because I feel like, yeah, this is worth it for me. But mostly travel, learning, etc. So this way, the profit first system was interesting to me, and here's the way I adapted it to my own needs. So I have many buckets. Like it might seem overwhelming at first. Like it's more complex than just having one bank account and spending and saving. And somehow I managed it mostly just fine before. I made multiple buckets, but much of it is like automated or for a specific purpose. So in practice, it doesn't have like overhead for me. So the first bucket is income. Again, this is where money comes in. So it's money from my job and money from my app, Tadam, which is on Mac App Store, link in the show notes. It's not a lot, but it's there. It's nice. Then the second bucket is tax. So I pay my own tax and I set aside money for that, and we'll get back to it. Then there's pass-through. So this is for like recurring larger purchases, like larger spending. Like right now, it's just like one thing. It's rent. Mm-hmm. Again, we'll get back to it in a second. Then there's profit. So by profit, I mean like long-term savings, not mm-hmm. savings as in I will spend it this year, but savings as in I probably won't have a use for that for the next 5 or 10 years. Then there's a small bucket called philanthropy, and this is something the idea I stole from you, which is to set aside a small percentage of income for philanthropic or charity causes. Nice. Consider it a tax on being a good citizen.
Very good.
Then there's the spending bucket, and the spending bucket is like everyday spending, like everyday stuff, like the food and the clothes and like all the everyday stuff except for rent, which is set aside differently. And then there's big savings, big spending. So big spending is what most people would call savings. So
the short-term savings.
Yeah, like short-term savings. So money I set aside for larger travel or hardware or whatever, right? And now the system is this. I have it partially automated through like automated transfers, but I couldn't automate it 100%. So I have a recurring task in Nozbe, obviously, for the first Sunday of the month when I spread the money into the buckets. So so for the tags bucket, there's an automatic fixed amount that's set aside for tax, because unlike businesses, it doesn't fluctuate that much. It fluctuates a little bit, so I calculated the amount that will always
cover
be enough, right? And then it goes to the tax account. It's a fixed amount every month, so there's stuff I have to pay every month, and there's stuff I pay every 3 months. So if on the once every 3 months there's money left, then it goes like to big spending, right? Like it's money I didn't spend, but there's a slightly too large amount set aside for tax. Then for pass through again, right now it's just rent, but maybe I'll have another use for it. So for me, it's actually also a fixed amount, so it goes automatically to the pass through account, and a couple of days later there's an automated transfer for the rent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then for spending, I calculated an amount which, based on like last year's data, will be enough. And I think it's slightly too large, but I don't want to pull it up. I want to push it down to set the cap moving forward. And the idea is so let's say I put 1,000 magic coins every month, but I don't like add 1,000 magic coins, because if I don't spend it all, I don't want to for the spending account to keep growing.
Okay.
But it's capped at say 1,100 magic coins. So I add up to 1,100 magic coins, but not more than 1,000 every month, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then for profit, there's a fixed percentage, again calculated and underestimated based on last year, which was a splurge year because of travel. So again, I don't want to constrain myself too much with like travel and stuff. So it's like smaller than necessary. I could set aside more, but I don't want to ever take money from the profit account. It's like there to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and for that I'll calculate a fixed percentage. So for tax, pass through, and spending, it's a fixed amount. For profit, it's a fixed percentage.
Yeah,
right. And then with the profit account, it circulates with another bank that has the best available time deposits, and every year small percentage goes to invest in ETFs, but it never comes back. Like profit is profit. Okay. Philanthropy, I calculated for like 2% pre-tax. I used to do like 3% after tax, and I figured out it would be easier like not to bother with tax, but it's more or less 2% pre-tax. So just 2% each month. And then everything else that's left after I put everything in the right buckets goes to big spending. So this is money to spend on hardware or for travel and whatnot. And the amount that should be there every month, more or less, like it's slightly variable, but not too much. It's comfortable, but not too comfortable. Like it's just a little. It's designed just to make me feel the pain if I get sloppy or greedy, right? And I put a cap on the big spending. Account. So there should always be enough money there so that if I want to, you know, have a splurge like last year when I had two big trips, like expensive trips to another continent, I can do it. But there's a maximum amount. Anything after that, if it's there, it goes to the profit account. And the idea behind that is to force intentionality on me, that even though I don't want to constrain myself too much, I still have to think about it in advance and not just act when might not necessarily be a good idea, or a good idea to do it now and not by thinking about it in advance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Very good. Very good. yeah, I have a similar system as for the percentages. So mm-hmm. With every as I mentioned already, I think in this past show, and as you mentioned also, that when I get to pay the tax based on the tax, I pay the percentage. But it's in my case, it's also pre-tax because it's percentage from the income, not from mm-hmm. from the income. So from the income. So mm-hmm. so it's the 3% for charity, 4% for kids, for example, to school. Mm-hmm. The idea being is that, you know, when one of my daughters decides to go to Harvard, I can pay at least, you know, a flight ticket to the USA. No, the first, you know, payment for, I don't know, for the first semester or whatever, or more semesters, whatever. But the thing is that they already have lots of money there. I mean, you know, because we've been, you know, she's 9 years now. So I've been saving money 9 years now for that.
Oh, wow. So you've been doing this for a long time.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, when I think about it, yes, that's true. So, from the very beginning when she was born, we started saving money. So and then also for other buckets, as I mentioned. So, and especially the bucket for the US expenses, so that we have that mm-hmm. money there. Because I have been sloppy with that like a year ago. And suddenly, you know, some charges wouldn't go through. And mm-hmm. it was embarrassing, and then suddenly, you know, we were in danger of some servers not working, so we cannot have that. So I have that, but yeah, and also the other thing that we have, which is another system, now that when I think about it, is the fact that lots of payments that we pay for the company are also done in PayPal. So in PayPal, automatically we pay for lots of servers and lots of services and stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So what it means is that we look at PayPal when these payments are due, but also people pay to Nozbe with PayPal. So so we only take the profit out, you know, after we've paid everyone in PayPal. So we've paid for the services, we pay to our affiliates in Nozbe because we have an affiliate program, and we pay also so and then the rest we decide with my father, okay, my father is our financial director. We decide, you know, okay, this much money we can put to the bank, you know, to our, you know, business account. So PayPal is also kind of our buffer for that, you know, that it, because money comes in, money goes out. And only after both of the transactions went, then we put the money aside. So PayPal is serving us this purpose in a way as well. So really what you're doing makes sense, makes complete sense. And what I really like about it is, as you mentioned, is that first decide on how much, and you cap yourself, which is really mm-hmm. smart that you cap yourself, especially with the, you know, with spending. I would like to, you know, bring back our discussion that we had before, that where you thought you had it and, you know, you had it all figured out, and then suddenly you saw that you were spending more money on the clothes that you ever wear, and it was surprising for you. So I'm sure that lots of listeners who would try to impose the system will then figure out that, I didn't know I was spending on beers that much. I don't drink so much beer, right? But then when you go out...
Yeah, actually, you know, when I figured out this is the cup I'll start with, and I have a number slightly lower in mind, and like this is like cap on like everyday bullshit, like on stuff that doesn't matter, that I don't care about, right? So I don't feel like it's appropriate to spend lots of money on it. And because like before I didn't manage it in any specific way, like only had the philanthropy bucket I had for a while, but otherwise like it was all like one bucket, and much of it like went to time deposits, so I didn't see like a big number on the balance sheet, but still like I managed it just fine and managed to set aside a good chunk for profit, so to speak, but still like I would every year I would spare more and more on stuff that doesn't matter. And when I started thinking about it and figured out that there must be a cap, and like, oh man, like now I have to fit it inside the cap, I started thinking about it more and looking back at the numbers from the analysis from last year. And I figured out a lot of small places, small like ways in which I would overspend on stuff that doesn't matter, that now I know, and I figured out like simple rules of thumb that, okay, I don't do this in this circumstance, period, because like makes no sense, and like boom, like we'll get back to the to this at the beginning of next year. But I think it will, I'll actually spend less and not more on this everyday stuff.
Yeah, and I would like to highlight here this also psychological thing that if you put them in these buckets, it's like it's not yours anymore. You know, it's just out there in these buckets, so you don't touch the money psychologically. It works very well. Like for example, what we mentioned, you know, the charity thing. You know, this money is not mine anymore. The moment I transfer it to the charity fund, to the charity, you know, sub account, it doesn't belong to me anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
So first of all, as you already mentioned some time ago, that if it's a percentage, then, you know, normally you wouldn't give so much money to the charity, but it's a percentage. So, you know, you're earning that much and it's a percentage, so it has to go there. There is no discussion. That's first thing. Second thing is then later you can really spend this money on some really good cause, and you normally wouldn't spend so much money for a cause, but now it's not yours anymore. You're not spending your money. Yeah. You're spending money that you've already put aside. It's not yours. And it's a completely different way of handling it.
Yeah, totally. And again, with the philanthropy bucket, I've also done it for, I think, like 2 or 3 years now. And, you know, it was never like a temptation or anything like that. I always like was like, huh, okay, like that's just like the 2 or 3%, and that's it. And then I would have no reservations in terms of like spending the money, because it was already pre-decided that it's just 2 or 3%. It doesn't matter. Like my life won't be worse for having 3% less money or 2% less money. And it's a good thing, right? It's a tax on being a good citizen.
Exactly.
And again, like much of it is automated. So most of these buckets are like for very specific rare causes, so or like stuff you do rarely. So tax, pass through, profit, philanthropy. So there's 4 buckets, but you don't think about them. Income, you only like look at it. I look at once a month to put money in other buckets. So like really 2 buckets matter: spending and big spending. Exactly. So it's not really a complicated system. It's a complex system at first, but you set it up, you figure it out. It took me, I was going back from some other city, and I was sitting in the train with the iPad and the Apple Pencil. I was going to do a week review, but I read this book and I was like, oh man, like I had to figure out like how to adapt this system. This is what I figured out. But I was like drawing boxes and like figuring out how to do it so that it makes sense. And just, this is the system I figured out. And maybe I'll tweak it a little bit, but maybe it'll last another 10 years and this is how I'll do things.
Yeah, and the author of the book actually is moving. He's more radical than we are, because he would tell you to move the money to a different bank where there is no online banking, where you can really not access them. Like he would really force you to move the money out to these buckets so that there is no easy way to get the money out. You know, so there is really no temptation. You know, you don't have to fight it. There is not just a one-click transfer to get the money back. You have to show up, you know, and sign 3 papers to just get the money out. So
no, if you have the history of having this tendency, then this is a great system. This is a great idea. I don't do this because I don't need to. Like I never had problem with this, so I'm fine. Like I just want like structure and a cap on myself. But I know like I won't be tempted to cheat the system I imposed on myself. But it's a good idea if you feel like you need a little more chains.
Exactly. But as you said, and as you wrote in your book notes, like you don't change yourself. You change the system and you apply the system. And when you have the system set up, really, there is no discussion. And this is the best part. There is no discussion. This is what goes. This is what goes. That's it. Then you make a review if you decide consciously to do a review of your system and to change the percentages, caps, or whatever. Perfect. But then it's a conscious decision.
Yeah, but it's something like you do like once a year or on a during like annual or quarterly review, like a big like statement, right? Not something you do on a whim, right?
Exactly.
And so even though there's more parts, in some sense, it's a much clearer system. There's like a big clarity. Like there's the spending account at the beginning of the month. There's a 1,000 magic coins there. And that's it, right? And I have to spend it so that it lasts. And there's no like extra decisions to make, right? And with the big spending, like that's the budget for all the splurge things, and that's my decision to make. I shall be intentional about it, but it's not mixed with money I don't intend to spend anytime soon. So there's no temptation. There's no decision. There's no analysis. It's just that's the bucket for stuff like this, and it really gives a lot of clarity.
Perfect. I really love it.
So I think we have enough time for a brief corner I think you wanted to make.
Yeah. Thank you. So, short basketball corner. My favorite team in the whole wide world, Golden State Warriors, just won an NBA championship. But it's not only about that they won, and then won very nicely, but the fact... what I really liked about that was the press conferences after they won. How much they highlighted, because the backstory was, and we actually discussed this on like 2 years ago when they lost championship, and I was really annoyed that they lost championship 2 years ago. And what happened 2 years ago is that their main star, Steph Curry, after they lost, he did a review and decided, you know, we have to recruit as another superstar to, you know, to help our team, you know, be better and win next year. And he recruited Kevin Durant, who's a very big superstar. So the thing was, there you are. You have a big superstar recruiting another superstar. And normally this would not happen because the superstar wouldn't want to have a competition inside his own team. But he actively recruited them. And Kevin Durant joined the team, and suddenly they had a few superstars, including Steph Curry. What happened was is they won championship last year, and then won championship this year. In both of these cases, there is an additional award for MVP, most valuable player, for the championship. And in both cases, this new star, Kevin Durant, won the award, right? Not the superstar who recruited him, right? Mm-hmm. And on this press conference, they asked both Kevin Durant and the coach. Steph Curry, he was so good in the finals, but yet he didn't get the award. And Kevin Durant, who got the award, said, "Does it really matter? It doesn't matter. I get this award. We don't care about that. I came to this team because Steph and I wanted to win championships. This is what we want. We don't care about, you know, personal accolades. Okay, you write about it. I mean, I have this award. I can put it on my shelf. But we came here together to win championships. This is what matters." And I loved it. I loved this, you know, eye on the prize. This is what matters, you know? Okay, I get this additional award for, you know, and Steph Curry got an award for, like, you know, record for most threes in one game or whatever. But they don't care about that. These superstars know that they are there together to win championships. Everything else is noise. And I love it. I just, it was so nice to listen to this and think about it, you know, in how many environments the ego is so important that it just trumps everything else. Yeah. And here you have two superstars and they don't fight over who gets the MVPs or whatever. They fight together to get the championships. That's all that matters.
It's quite refreshing.
Oh, yes, it is.
Although I don't care about basketball.
Yeah, I know. But I'm going to link in the show notes to my blog post, which I'm writing right now about this, because I just, there are the quotes, the literal quotes, what they said, and links to the, you know, press conferences, if you want, if you're curious. But because, you know, for me, it was such a great leadership lesson. You know, from...
Yeah, no, I understand. I don't care about basketball, but I definitely see the appeal of this. This is refreshing, especially, I guess, in sports, like on such a high level, when people just get... they have their heads so far... Okay, I don't want to say that.
Exactly.
They they put their egos so far in the front. Like the more successful people are, the more they think they're the center of the world. So, you know, putting the ego aside and seeing the big picture, it makes a lot of sense.
There was additional one thing that Kevin, just one additional thing. So Kevin Durant, who joined the team when Steph recruited him, was there for 1 year, and he had an option to extend for another year. And of course he did pursue the option because he wanted to win another championship. But there was a problem. He was earning too much money. So they would have to give out one of the other stars. And he decided to cap his salary so that they can still get the star. So nice. Again, like, I love this team because they are so selfless. Because, you know, he's been earning lots of money and he's very rich. But then he decided, you know, to just give up on some of it to make sure that the team stays intact, that they still are the same team. And, like, really great example. Well, that's it.
All right. As for picks, I wanted to recommend one book that I read recently. It's Conspiracy by Ryan Holiday, or with the subtitle Peter Thiel, Hulk Hogan, Gawker, and the Anatomy of Intrigue. So I came across this on Audible like a long time ago because we discussed another book by Ryan Holiday, Ego is the Enemy, speaking of.
Exactly.
but it's like, you know, I saw it, Conspiracy, and it's like, no. I didn't even see the subtitle, so I was not interested. But there's a discussion about the book on Hello Internet Podcast 103. So I think we'll be talking about the book, so I would refer you to Hello Internet 103 for like commentary on the book. So in short, it's the story of how Gawker published something about Hulk Hogan, and he didn't like it because it was really not cool. And in general, Gawker was this like pretty terrible, sleazy company with all of his gossip websites, all that stuff. And then Hulk Hogan sued them, and it turns out he had a backer for the lawsuit. And in the end, Gawker got bankrupted by the lawsuit. And then it turned out that Peter Thiel, which is this billionaire VC investor, was behind it, bankrolling it. And it's a fascinating story because, like, I think a lot of people in the tech industry heard about this thing. I heard about it something, but I didn't go deep into the details. And the book makes it far more interesting. Like, because it's not just like a simple story with one good guy and what bad guy and a simple storyline with one conclusion, but it's a much more complex one where both Peter Thiel and Hulk Hogan and Gawker are in certain versions of the story the good guys, and in other versions of the story one of them is the bad guy, and like it's all complex and really strange, and it's one of the book that you keep thinking about it and trying to make up your mind what you think about it, like what's the right thing, what's the wrong thing, but it's not as simple as that. Like it makes you think about, on one hand, the sleaziness of a company like Gawker and how they could get away with it for so long. On the other hand, you think about how terrible it is that a rich billionaire, just because they don't like them, they can sue them and put them out of business. On the other hand, you think about the US law system and how only a billionaire could do it because it took 10 years and, you know, tens of millions of dollars to sue them and see it to the end. Like, it's all messed up. It's all like really complex and a lot of challenging issues come up with this. So I think it's worth reading. I don't have any judgment, final judgment on the book. I'm just saying it's worth reading and try to make up your own mind. But for me, I couldn't. Like, it's I can see multiple viewpoints, but I can't say which is the right one. So fascinating. Conspiracy by Ryan Holiday.
So basically, a terrible website being sued by a terrible billionaire.
Yes.
Making a terrible mess.
Yes.
All right. I'll check it out.